This is David's Book Talk, bringing authors and book lovers together in a unique way since 2009. Visit us at davidsbooktalk.com and join the conversation at facebook.com/davidsbooktalk. But first, pull up a chair, relax, and enjoy today's episode. Here's your host, David English.
Hello and welcome to David's Book Talk, and we have a very special guest. I'm very excited. Lorenzo Lamas is here to talk about his autobiography, Renegade at Heart. It's written with Jeff Lindberg, and it's out from Ben Bella Books. Hello.
Hi, David.
Nice to have you on the show.
Oh, thank you. Thanks for inviting me to spend a little while talking.
Oh, well, I was nervous. I'm always nervous before I talk to famous people. You never know how they're going to be, and everybody has so many quirks, you know. And you just never know, you know, what's a celebrity really like. So, if somebody asked you what you're really like, what would you tell them?
I'm a normal husband, father, hard worker. I'm not a typical actor or celebrity per se. It's just what I do for a living.
Were you always like that, or has that evolved over time?
I think I've always been like that. You know, first of all, my parents were both very successful actors, and so whatever I did in my little career had been done before by them. So it kind of keeps your feet on the ground, you know, when nobody makes a big deal out of getting a TV series because, hey, you know, I had one.
Right.
You know? So I think that was part of it.
Yeah, I mean, you were on a very popular show. I mean, Falcon Crest was hugely popular in its day. I mean, I think it's still showing. I think Amazon, you can still watch episodes on Amazon. It's still watchable today. When you watch it now, what do you think?
I haven't watched it, to be honest with you. I haven't seen an episode of Falcon Crest since I stopped taping them for broadcast back in, I guess it was 1990. And the same thing with Renegade. It was a job. I did the job, and
right.
I was very thankful.
Mm-hmm.
But then you just move on. I don't watch the old shows. But I do. I do from time to time run into people that love the show and still can get the shows on DVD, both Falcon Crest and Renegade. So it's great. I'm glad that.
And you've made lifetime friends too. From those shows,
I'm
sure.
Oh, yes, absolutely. You know, I mean, there's a stereotype about being a family when you're doing a TV series, and it's true. You know, once you get past that second or third season, you're spending more time with the people on the set than you are with your family at home.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you do become a family.
Did you ever have trouble with memorization? Memorizing lines, or?
Yes. I mean, there are a few instances when I couldn't get my lines down, and of course, when you're worried about remembering your lines, you then can't remember your lines.
Right, exactly.
You're worried about not remembering them,
mm-hmm.
and that kind of feeds into this vicious circle. But for the most part, I've been pretty handy with memorization and the rehearsing and getting together with your actors before. You have to do it for real.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you look at the daytime soaps and what they go through every day to memorize, and then the lines and the dialogue they memorize. I mean, you did it at night, but I think nighttime's a little easier, isn't it, than daytime? I mean, you did both, so which was harder for you?
Well, there's no question that daytime actors are the hardest working actors in the business, without question, because of the workload. I mean, when I was on Bold and Beautiful, I walked around with my script. I mean, when I had family dinners, I took my kids to the movies or the park or picked them up from school. I always had my script with me.
Wow.
Because you had to memorize, you know, 20 pages of dialogue every day.
I don't know how they do it. I applaud them. That's hard work. I mean, that is really difficult stuff.
It's very, very hard work. It's very hard work. And you still have to stand up in front of the camera and tell the truth. You
right.
have to be a good actor to be on a daytime show because there's just so much work happens so quickly. You still have to do the job. So, yeah, I have tremendous respect for daytime actors.
Just reading this book, and I really enjoyed reading this book, it just intrigued me all the way through. What really impressed me was how much you really care about your children. And, you know, you see actors today, and, you know, they're working so hard. Their kids seem to be, a lot of times, second. You know, what comes first is their work, and their kids come second. But it's all through this book is your worry for your kids and your concern. And I think that's wonderful. I really enjoyed that. And it's nice to know you're a good father.
Well, thank you for seeing that. I do try to be a good father. Nobody's an expert, you know, and God knows there's a lot of dysfunction in the world to prove that.
But, yes.
You know, I think I'm a better father at my age now, you know, being in my 50s and than I was in my 20s.
You know,
it's just, I don't think I just don't think it's possible to be a good parent and have a busy career in show business. I just don't think there's enough time.
Yeah.
You're always on the set when you're working as an actor. You're on the set 12 hours a day. And, who's going to pick up the kids from school? And who's going to go to the baseball game? So it's just a very, very tough, if not impossible. So I think I'm a better parent for my three younger kids because the business aspect of my life has been fairly quiet the last 10, 15 years, you know, since my last series back in 2001, I've been home a lot.
Yeah.
So,
well, that's good.
I think that helps.
Yeah, that's good.
As far as the parenting.
And I'm sure you like being at home. I'm sure it's certainly, I'm sure you wish you had been home more often than you were. I mean, working the hours you did, I mean, you had to have yearned to be at home a lot.
Well, you know, it's funny, when you're a busy actor and your career is hot and you're working all the time, you don't really think of what it would be like to be home because you're always on the set. You're always working, and that's your life.
Mm-hmm.
And the time that you spend at home when you're a busy working actor, it's usually looking at scripts for the work that's coming up or the episodes that are being filmed next week. So it's really a tremendously encompassing life when you're a busy actor.
Well, what's been
really
the
has no time for home.
What has been the hardest thing for you? I mean, what if you had to say one thing was harder than anything else, what was it?
Well, I think just that's a really, really hard question to answer because it has so many levels. You know, the hardest thing for me to deal with in my life as an actor is probably when it stops. You know, when my work stops and I could no longer depend on getting work to feed my family, there was a period of time of great, great concern and even depression. And that's when my career kind of spilled over into my personal life.
I mean, do you feel like you're not worth? Do you feel unworthy when you're not working?
It's
like you're not important anymore?
You feel like you know when you graduate high school and you're on top of the world, you know, because mm-hmm. you're the senior and all the underclassmen are kind of looking up to you, and then you graduate high school and you go off into your life and your whatever work that you're going to start doing or going to college, and then you come back to your high school a couple of years later, and everything has changed. It's like you don't recognize the kids, and some of the teachers are gone, and there's kind of a feeling of sadness, you know, that things have changed, and they've moved on without you,
mm-hmm.
you know, and that's what it feels like when you can't find work as an actor anymore. It's like, you know, you got to the bus stop, and it already left, and then you're standing there wondering, when's the next bus going to come?
Right, exactly.
You know, so it's a very difficult, especially it was hard for me because I worked nonstop, you know, since I was pretty much like 19, 20 years old.
And you were in every episode you were of Falcon Crest. I don't think you missed an episode, did you?
Well, no, not of that show, but I mean, that was my fifth television series.
Wow.
The point is, I worked consistently for 20 years and then it ended. And that was a very difficult thing to come to grips with.
that's a long period of time, and then nothing, and then bam, there's nothing. Yeah, that had to be really hard for you. So how do you deal with that? I mean, what do you do to deal with that?
Well, you just got to look in your toolbox and figure out, okay, what's in there that I can use to work? You know, and I had a voice that, you know, a singing voice that I never did anything with. So I started taking voice lessons, and I started talking to people that were in musical theater stage because I am an actor. Although I'd never done stage before, I had a singing voice, so why couldn't I try to find work in musical theater? So I did. I was able to, with the help of a few very key people. Michael Feinstein really helped me get my stage presence out there and known to the public. I opened for Feinstein's at the Regency back in 2006. I did his show. I did a 90-minute cabaret for 2 weeks. And then that sparked a lot of interest in...
You talk about hard work. That's hard work.
But, I mean, it allowed me to make some money, and I wasn't getting any film work or television work, so that was the only thing that was really helping to put bread on the table.
Well, what was stopping you from getting film and TV work? I mean, what was it, do you think?
It just, I think I was stereotyped as an action star, and, you know, when the syndicated action shows kind of petered out there around the mid-2000s, there wasn't work for actors like me, you know, because networks weren't really doing those action shows, those one-hour action shows anymore, like, you know, Baywatch and Highlander and right. Xena and Hercules. And those shows were just, they kind of fell out of fashion, and that's what I was known for.
Mm-hmm.
So there just wasn't a lot of work.
Yeah, and that must have been hard for you. It's hard to deal with. I mean, I can only imagine how hard it was to deal with. But, I mean, when you're working... I mean, and Renegade was hard on your body, too. You talk about that in the book, how difficult it was. It was a lot. Did you have a stunt double at all in that show, or was it all you?
On Renegade, it was all me. I hit the ground, you know, for 5 years. And it was great. I mean, I like being my own stunt person. I was able to do things in front of the camera that really lent a feeling of credibility. That's, you know, when you have a stunt double, you have to really be careful because you don't want the audience ever to think that it's not you.
Yeah, oh yeah, certainly.
So on Renegade, I never had that worry because I did everything. And I coordinated all the fights myself, and I worked with stuntmen that had never taken a spinning kick to the head, and it was a great experience, but it was hard on my body. And then the show after Renegade was Air America, and I convinced the producers to hire a body double for me just for the wider shots where you wouldn't really know whether it was me or not.
Mm-hmm.
And so I did have a stunt double for that series, and it was great. It was really took a lot of the pressure off of me having to do all the hard stuff, you know, especially like the long distance shots of running and things like that.
So, do you still have a motorcycle today?
I still have a motorcycle, yeah.
Do you? That's great.
I'm always going to try to have a motorcycle because if I don't have a way to, you know, release that tension,
yeah, absolutely.
Everything else in my life kind of suffers, you know, so.
And the women in your life, I mean, have been interesting to say the least. I mean, I'm laughing, but there were some serious moments. The scene with Shauna, I mean, what happened with Shauna and the kids was quite, I mean, I'm reading that the other night, and I'm thinking, my God, what a horrible time for you. I just felt this instant empathy for you.
I really had no clue how to pick the right girl until I was mature enough to understand what the right girl would look like.
Well, when did you fully? When do you think you fully matured to be able to do that?
Oh my God! It took me 4 marriages to really understand what a real relationship is supposed to be.
Right. What it was? Did you have a roving eye? Was that it? Was that the problem, or was it just that there was no time?
Not really. It wasn't so much about the roving eye. It was just I used to just want to have somebody in my life because I didn't want to be alone.
Right.
And I would just pick someone I thought I looked good together with.
Oh, okay. Not necessarily, you know, knowing how it would play out.
or who they were.
Yeah, who they were.
So, I mean, if you want to use an analogy, you want to go buy a decent automobile, you know. You go to a car dealer and you look at the automobile, but you check everything. Not just the body, you know, you don't just check the paint and the wheels and, you know, kick the tires. You have to open up the hood and look in the engine and see how many miles it's got and determine whether it's mechanically sound.
Exactly.
So I would go to the dealership for a wife and just look at the paint job.
At least you can be honest about it, you know? That's cool.
I'd end up buying a lemon. So that's what I did in my life, and it took almost 50 years to kind of figure out that I was doing it wrong.
And the fact that
and a lot of painful lessons later.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, yeah, that's a lot of people go through stuff like that. It's easy to get caught in that trap, I guess. I mean, you're so busy, you know, you find the woman, and then you just want to, and you don't have the time to spend, and you know, you're working, like you said, 12 hours a day, and you know, and that's a lot of work.
It's just really not paying attention to the details. You have to pay attention to the details. And you've got to read the signs and understand that there are signs that everybody puts out there. And some of the signs are like red flags, and you got to listen to them, and you got to pay attention to them.
Right.
And I didn't, you know, until it was too late. And but in the process, you know, I had children that I love and care about. And so if you're going to look at the positive end of it, that would be it, probably.
Absolutely. And are you in good terms with all your kids now? I know you had trouble with AJ at one point, but I mean...
Well, you know, I mean, nobody's perfect.
No, absolutely not. You're right.
Including myself. And you have to kind of accept that, you know, and not be too judgmental, not be too harsh.
It's funny when you watch an actor on TV, like I remember watching Falcon Crest, and you know, you walk around and you think and as a viewer, you think, I wonder if that person's how full of themselves they are in real life. I mean, they're real popular. They're on a popular show. Everybody must do everything for them, and they must be really full of them. Did you ever get really full of yourself?
Well, not really, because, again, you know, I had my parents that had done everything before me, so it was no big deal. Yeah, right. The television series, great. A movie, oh, that's great. Yeah, Lorenzo, you know,
right.
I've done 50 of them. So
I feel this total
kept me grounded.
Right.
And then also having children kept me pretty grounded, because the responsibility of supporting a family is very grounding.
Right. Oh, yeah, absolutely. I feel this.
I never got too full of myself.
Right. When I read the book, I just feel this total empathy for you that you didn't get to spend more time with your dad. And that's a constant theme in this book, that how much time you wanted to spend with your dad. You loved being around your dad, and yet you couldn't be around him as much as you wanted to be. And it almost made me want to cry, because I'm thinking, oh, this poor kid. It just longs to be with his father.
People that have their parents are so lucky, because I had to share my parents with the world.
Right.
Yeah, because they were famous, and then my dad died when I was 24. So, yeah, it was really hard. I mean, people go, how hard can it be when you're a celebrity? It can be hard, you know, because you're dealing with the same personal challenges that everybody deals with, and you have to deal with them in the public eye, so people know and they.
It's even worse today. Yeah, it's even worse today, I think, than it was back in the 80s when you were popular then. I mean, I don't know what the paparazzi was like back then, but I know it's worse today.
I know it's worse today, too.
I mean, it's like they follow you everywhere. You see these things on TV where they just follow these celebrities around. It's like they invade their whole life. It's scary. It's like you have no life at all, being as famous as you are. Did you have a life when you were popular?
I did, for the most part, and I think because the point that you just made, you know, there was a respect kind of that you had with the press that no longer exists. You know, nobody hung around my house and waited for me to come out of my door,
right.
You know, to take pictures or to shove cameras in my face, or, you know, I mean, you only really saw the press when you were going to an event of some sort, a red carpet event or a fundraising event. That's really the only time you saw the press, and now they're just everywhere following you in cars. And you know, I really am kind of glad that I'm not a big star right now, because it would be very difficult to deal with that.
Yeah, yeah, and you open the National Enquirer now, and they have, oh, here's what the celebrity looks like today. Here's what they look like 30 years ago. It's like they just fixate on that age thing, and it's like, you know, leave them alone. Just let them let them be happy, you know?
Yeah, it's gross. It really is pretty gross. How they try to tear a person down.
It's like, this is somebody we have loved over the years. Let's leave it at that, you know? Just leave it as somebody. I mean, I grew up with you, Lorenzo. I grew up with Falcon Crest, and that's what I remember. That's the beautiful things that I remember. And nobody wants that tainted, you know? You don't want to think badly of anybody. And you've had your problems. I've had my problems. And, you know, we're human beings. We're flawed. And I just enjoyed watching you on TV. So what harm is that? But I wonder why you wrote this book now. I mean, why now? Who talked you into writing the book?
Actually, Jeff Lenberg emailed me. I didn't know him, but he emailed me, and I've been asked to write a book a couple of times over the last 5-10 years, and I thought it would be too hard, and who would care? And right. You know, but Jeff really kind of talked me into doing it. And I figured, okay, well, you know, I'm in my 50s now. I'm not going to write a book now. I probably would never do it. So, and my wife really told me that I should do it because I have stories and they're funny. And so I did it, and I'm glad that I did. Now that, you know, I have a little bit of a reference out there for people that are curious about my life and about my parents' life. There's something for them to go and get, to read, to...
And your mom is your mom going to be 90 this year?
Oh, don't ask me how old my mom is. She's been hiding her driver's license for my whole life.
Oh, really? That's interesting.
Yeah, I think she's somewhere between, like, 80 and 90. Somewhere in there.
I'm going by IMDb, I guess, but it says she's going to be 90 this year. But
no, she'll deny it. You know, deny. I don't know how old she's ageless. You know,
I mean,
mom is just one of those people that you just can't really pinpoint a number on. She's really positive and very kind of out there in the stars. You know, she's an astrologer and all that.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think she ages.
How often do you talk to her?
Almost every week.
Oh, that's good.
Pretty much every week, yeah. I talk to her a lot.
I can remember seeing her on One Life to Live. I remember watching her on One Life to Live. She was such a dynamo on that show. I mean, just a force of nature, I remember. Just, you know, when you watch the episode, she stood out. She was like, you know, she was like the...
Yeah. she was a movie star doing daytime.
Yeah, amazing. That's amazing.
Yeah.
Now, what was your relationship with Esther Williams like? I mean, you don't talk much. I mean, you mention her in the book a lot, but you don't really talk about how you got along with her or what your relationship was like with her.
I had a great relationship with Esther. I had a really good relationship with her, especially as a kid, you know, because she was that maternal, besides my nanny, Emily, or Emmy. Esther was the person that kind of was that maternal influence on me. You know, she taught me how to do everything around the house, you know, everything. Dishes and laundry and shopping and all that domestic stuff.
That's so important. That's so important,
you know,
for a child.
I got from her.
Yeah.
Like a mother. Like a mother would show her children, you know.
Right.
How to make a salad, you know, and how to work the oven. And, you know, this is how you do a toaster. You know, it's like all that basic stuff I got from Esther.
It sounds so simple, but it's, you know, there's ways to do things. I mean, there's...
And I got a real supportive, you know, person that, you know, after high school, when I was struggling with what I'm going to do with the rest of my life, you know, I mean, I had this person that would sit down with me, you know, at night, you know, after the heat of the day, and we'd sit by the pool and we'd talk about life and we'd talk about, you know, the universe, and I had a real connection with her.
That's
when she died, I tweeted out that she was my soul mother, and that's what she was. She felt like kind of my soul checkmate in terms of having a mother. You know, and I love my mom. I love Arlene.
Mm-hmm.
But my mom is, like I said, she's kind of out there in the stars, and she's not as grounded as Esther was. And I think when you're a young kid, you're kind of trying to figure out how the world works, and you need somebody that's grounded to teach you.
Were you a happy kid, basically? I mean, I'm sure your parents, I mean, I know your father was always busy doing things, but I mean, were you a relatively happy child?
I had moments that I was happy as a kid, like when I was living in the Palisades at Willow Grove. There were like 3 or 4 years there that I really felt happy. I had my friends, and I had consistency in my life, and I could play outside and hike around in the hills of Santa Monica. And, it was an idyllic period, but that didn't last very long because I went to military school at 13.
Oh.
And then from that moment, from 13 on, it's just tough, you know, tough being away from my dad, tough being in military school, not coming home, going to other kids' homes, you know, for...
You kept getting shoved around a lot. That must have been really hard for you.
Yeah, I moved around a lot as a kid. Yeah, I moved around a lot.
Does it make you to be moved around that much, does it make you feel like you're not loved sometimes?
I don't know. I don't know whether it just made me feel not loved as much as it just made me feel nervous. Like, I was always getting used to new places and new people.
Right.
And it's tough for a kid.
And that's what you do in your acting job. You go from people to people, too. You go from movie to movie. And
yeah, it probably really helped me get ready for the acting business.
Yeah.
Because of the constant change.
Now, who do you still keep in contact with on Falcon Crest? Who do you still talk to? I know some people aren't alive anymore, but...
Let's see. From Falcon Crest, I still talk to Billy Moses. Still talk to David Selby. I still talk to Annalicia.
Oh, wow.
I stay in touch with...
That's cool.
You know, a good number of those folks.
I haven't seen much of her on TV or movies, Annalicia. I don't know
if she quit the business to raise her kids.
Oh, good for her. That's good to hear. I mean, it's important.
And she married a really nice guy, Gary Benz, who owns a production company, GRB. You know, they have done that show, Intervention, which basically, I mean, Gary and his company pretty much started the reality genre.
Mm-hmm.
With the first show they did was The Greatest American Stuntman, which is basically a search to find the next famous stunt person, you know,
cool.
Like Dar Robinson or somebody like that, or, you know. She did very well, and she's a doll.
Right. She was so pretty, too, and she really could act. I mean, she wasn't just a person there. She was a good actor. I remember her being good in this.
Very good actress, yeah.
I mean, you guys always had these. I remember the scenes, the marital scenes between you guys were always interesting to watch. You know?
Yeah, we had a lot of fun working together. We were kind of like a brother and sister. We loved each other as friends, and we worked really well together. Yeah, there was a chemistry there, for sure, you know, and people that watched the show really saw that. And then when they brought in Christian Alfonso to kind of replace Annalicia as my wife.
Oh, I forgot she was on that show. Wow.
Yeah, they hated it. They hated it. And Christian was sweet, very sweet, and we got along great, but there wasn't the same chemistry that I had with Annalicia.
Oh, yeah. I mean, once you have that chemistry, there's nothing else that's going to replace it. That's just it. I mean, it's like having Laurel without Hardy. You know, it's just not the same. There's no way.
And it's funny, you know, people say, well, you know, I mean, if you have that chemistry with a person that you're working with so much on a set and you're being intimate with them on camera, something's got to happen. I mean, you have to have a real relationship in real life. I mean, you guys are going to fall in love. There's no doubt. And we, you know. We never did. We just had that great chemistry. We worked together really well. There was an attraction there, but there is also a line, you know, like a border that you don't cross of mutual respect, you know.
Right, exactly.
And, but we had fun. We would mess with the crew so much. Like, we'd be doing a scene, and we'd be under the covers rolling around in there like we're trying to make out, stuff like that. We'd be laughing and giggling, and the crew would just be exasperated. It's like, okay, guys, can we just do this scene already? Stop messing around.
Right.
We, it's fun.
If you could pick a TV series that you could be on today, what would it be?
A TV series that I could be on today, like if I could, like...
Yeah, if you want a current TV, yeah, current TV series, if you could pick anyone, what kind... I know you mentioned in the book how you like comedy, how you really discovered comedy and how interesting that was. Could you do a sitcom?
Yeah, I would love to do a sitcom like Two and a Half Men. That would be awesome.
Yeah.
And I think for drama, I would love to be on Ray Donovan. That's my favorite show.
Yeah, I've yet to see Ray Donovan. I know it's on Showtime. I know it's a couple seasons.
Lee Schreiber and John Voight, they're amazing.
John Voight just seems to get better as the older he gets. He takes on these roles that are just amazing, you know. It's like he was an amazing actor back then, and he still is today, you know. He just never, it's like Bruce Dern. Bruce Dern's still around. Amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing, these actors. And that seems to be the thing today. You got Betty White at 93, and she's still in a sitcom. I mean, it's an amazing world out there right now.
Yeah, there's a lot of diversity for an actor these days, much more than ever before, I think.
Do they ever call you up to any of the sitcoms ever call you up to have you make an appearance?
I did an episode. Well, I did a couple of episodes of Big Time Rush, which is a Nickelodeon show.
Okay.
That was maybe a year or 2 years ago. Every once in a while, and then I did a reality show that was kind of a comedy called Joe Schmo for Spike TV.
Oh yes.
That was just fantastic. I loved that experience because you were kind of doing comedy improv on camera, like every day, you know, and trying to fool this guy that thought it was real.
I mean, Falcon Crest was somewhat of a serious show, but it did have its comedic moments. I can remember just, you know, laughing at some of the stuff that was going on, because some of it was funny. But it wasn't, you know, it was supposed to be serious, but I'm sure you had fun behind the scenes, like you said. But, you know, there's comedic elements in any show, I guess you do, but we just don't always see them on the screen, you know?
Yeah, Falcon Crest really wasn't a comedy.
Of all the things that you've done, do you have a favorite, or is it all just work to you, or are there some that you liked more than others? Obviously, you liked doing Renegade.
Yeah, Renegade was my favorite, if I had to pick one. I think because of the people that I worked with on a daily basis, you know, and the character was, like, pretty much made for me, you know. A guy that rides motorcycles and knows karate, I mean, it was perfect.
Mm-hmm.
And I liked the nobility of the character. I always kind of tried to be like my character in real life. I tried to be like Reno. You know, what would Reno do? What would Reno say? How would Reno react to this, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So that was pretty fun.
So there's always something here. I mean, obviously you're interested in all that stuff, so that made the show more fun. I mean, going to work every day had to be fun. It's like baseball players. They go and they're doing what they love to do. So that makes it much more fulfilling.
Going to work was really fun on that show.
And you made a lot of friends, I'm sure. I know you, Ranscombe, I'm sure you still keep in touch with him.
Yeah, I'm still in touch with Ranscombe and a lot of the stuntmen that came down to do the show, I'm still friends with. So yeah, you make a lot of long-term relationships when you're working.
So where do you see yourself in the next 10 years? I mean, what would you, are there things you want to do still? Other things besides acting? Are you constantly thinking up new things to do? I mean, do you want to write another book or what?
No, I just want to fly helicopters.
Oh, you do?
Yeah. I mean, I made a switch a couple of years ago, you know, to become a commercial helicopter pilot, and so now I'm very busy working in my new career as a pilot. I fly tours in Los Angeles and charter. I picked up George Lopez last month and flew him to an Indian casino out there in San Bernardino.
Oh, that's neat.
So it's great. Yeah, I don't really think too much about acting anymore. I'm very busy being a pilot.
It's funny because I work with the helicopter parts. Isn't that interesting?
What do you do?
I work with parts. I work in a place that puts together helicopters here in Pennsylvania, Coatesville.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
What kind of helicopters do you build parts for?
No, I'm more of the warehouse type, the getting the parts together and making sure they get over to where they belong. So,
like you work for, what kind of helicopters parts do you handle?
All different kinds. I mean, you name it. I work for Sikorsky, so it's a pretty big company. But
Sikorsky is awesome. That's the helicopter that Trump has.
Oh, does he? I didn't know that.
Yeah, he's had a few helicopters, you know, in the past, but I think he's flying Sikorsky now. They're great helicopters.
How did you get into helicopters? I'm curious. I mean, where did that start?
Well, I started flying airplanes back in the 90s, and I learned how to fly an airplane so I could go pick up my kids who were living in Arizona, my older kids. Their mother had remarried, and they moved to Arizona. So getting the kids to come and visit me was a hassle using the commercial airline. So I went and got a license, and then I would go and pick them up and bring them back. And then we'd spend more time together that way because we'd be in the airplane for a few hours after school on Friday and then Sunday evening. So it was just a way to see more of my kids.
How long does it take to learn to fly? I mean, I know you have to have a certain number of hours in the air, but I mean, how long did it take you?
As far as helicopters, you need 40 hours of dual training, in other words, with an instructor, and 20 hours in the helicopter to be licensed to fly one. It takes an average of between 50 to 60 hours, however, to really be confident enough to take the FAA check ride.
Right. So,
but it depends on a person, you know. I mean, you could, if you treat your goal to become a private pilot, if you treat it like a job and fly every day, you can get your private pilot's license in about 2 months, you know.
That's pretty cool. That's pretty quick. I didn't realize that you could get it that quickly. But I guess anything if you want it, you can get it. I mean, if you have the will to do it, and I think frankly you can do anything if you wanted. Now you're still with Shauna, right?
I'm married to my last wife.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be 4 years married. April 30th.
Very nice.
We've been together 5 years now. Coming up. In November.
Now, what is it about her that really? I mean, you describe in the book when you first met her, but how is she different from the other women in your life, or is it just that you have more time to spend with her?
No, she's the most different of anybody. You know, she's the one. She's like the one.
Ah. Right. Well, I'm wondering what exactly about her.
What makes her the one?
Yeah. Without going into, I'm not trying to get personal.
No, she's the most generous person I've ever known. She lets me be who I am, and she's sweet and not self-centered and not motivated by selfish desires.
Mm-hmm.
She's just a great girl.
Did you know that from the get-go, or did you find out as the relationship progressed?
Well, you don't know everything right away,
right?
You know, but what I was attracted to was her sweetness, and she was really fun. Like, she loved life and the simple things of life. Just, you know, getting in the car and driving out to the beach was like, she loved it, and we loved going to the gym together.
That's neat.
And then that, of course, you know, grows. As the relationship grows, you become more and more aware of who the person is inside of that nice, beautiful shell.
Mm-hmm.
And we're physical. We both like outdoor stuff. And that was a really important commonality. And then, of course, seeing her interact with my kids was really, really important because my three youngest daughters were very small when I met Shauna. You know, I think the oldest was only like 13, mm-hmm. and the youngest was like 8. So that was important, and that worked out great. I mean, they adore her. So
that's neat.
She's just the one, you know.
Yeah. I was just curious as to what it was about her that was different. You know,
I just was not looking. Also, I wasn't. I was just raising my little girls as a single parent, you know. And when I met Sean, I was like, oh yeah, a girl in my life. I never thought I'd have another.
That's how often when it happens, when you least expect it. I mean, when you try hard to meet somebody, that's when you can't meet anybody, it seems like.
And then, you know, there were challenges, but the challenges were easily overcome because there was a basic kindness in her and a heart in her
mm-hmm.
that my kids saw. And that's it. She won them over.
Now, what kind of, have you gone to bookstores for this book? I mean, have you done a lot of bookstore appearances?
I haven't done any bookstore appearances.
Really?
None, yeah. And I don't know if I'm going to. It's a small company, so I don't think they have the dough.
Oh.
but, you know, we did do a lot of press when I was in New York for mm-hmm. the Celebrity Apprentice. So, you know, I mean, Wendy Williams talked about the book. I did another show, like Access Hollywood, I think, or Extra. I did, promoted the book.
Right. Well, that's cool.
Yeah. I mean, I got it out there. And now it's still in bookstores, and it's on Amazon. And the reviews have been really good. My ex-wife, Kathleen, even wrote a really good review. you can read that on Amazon.
Oh, really? That's
yeah.
Neat. I'll have to look that up.
That was really, really nice of her. I still talk with her, and my wife and her are good friends.
You just seem like you're at peace right now. I mean, I just talking to you, it just seems like you're very peaceful, you're very quiet.
I am at peace. I'm at peace right now because I no longer have to worry about getting work as an actor. That is so stressful.
Yeah, I can imagine. I can only imagine.
I'm pursuing a career that has definite steps up the ladder, you know. And there's nobody, you know, sitting on a ladder, you know, kind of blocking my path. I'm free to climb as fast and as high as I want.
Now, how old is your youngest child now?
My youngest is Isabella. She's 14.
14.
She'll be 14 for a while.
Right. And you're at peace with all your children. I mean, it's just nice that you have, after all this time, after all the hard work you've done, now you're at a level where you're just happy where you are, and
yeah.
you can be that way for the rest of your life and do what you want and do what makes you happy.
Exactly.
And, you know, a lot of actors, you know, have problems, and some of them never recover from them, you know. You hear about all these child actors who, and you never really were a child actor. I mean, you were pretty much, how old were you when you first acted?
I did my first acting job when I was 18.
18, okay. So you didn't yeah. have the child, you weren't.
I started as an adult. Yeah, I didn't have the kid acting thing.
You hear so many horror stories about child actors, you know, having a terrible adult life, and it happens. But you know, it's nice that.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of examples of that, but there's even more examples of child actors that have actually made huge careers and adult careers, like
Ron Howard,
Leo DiCaprio.
Yeah.
You know,
there's
what's
a lot.
That actor's? Kurt Russell.
Russell, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you don't have to fall into the traps if you don't want to.
I still remember Kurt Russell being on an episode of Lost in Space back in the 60s. it's weird. I mean, it's hard to believe he's been around that long. But, you know, you look back and you think, oh, my God. And you watch the episode and you can see his face. And it's like, that's Kurt Russell. You know it's him.
He had an amazing career.
And
my wife and I were just watching Escape from L.A. on television last night.
And you look at all the work he's done, and you don't even realize how many things he's actually done. I mean, it's amazing.
Yeah, incredible career.
And you've had
I like
a nice
to focus on the positive.
Exactly, and that's it. And that's the way to go, because why
and
focus
look at
on the negative?
DiCaprio. Look at the career that he's had. Justin Timberlake, the career that he's had.
He's going to be a dad soon now, too. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, JT was, wasn't he a Mouseketeer or something like that?
Yeah, he was on the Mickey Mouse thing. Yep.
Yeah.
Yes, you're correct. He was.
Pretty amazing.
Yeah, and it's what you can do when you really put your mind to it is amazing. I mean, you just.
There are no excuses. If you fall into a trap, it's of your own making.
Now, didn't you have acting lessons from somebody? I think you mentioned that in the book.
I studied at the Film Actors Workshop,
right,
under Laura Rose.
Oh, okay. Were there any famous people that were in your same class?
No, I don't remember any other famous people in my class.
Right. I was just curious whether. Well, that's good, and that, I'm sure that helped you. And you were how old when you started Falcon Crest? 21. So young.
Yeah, I had been acting for about 4 years before I got Falcon Crest.
No, that's cool. Well, lots of good work for you. It's been fun to talk to you. We really have to let you go because I'm sure you're busy with something else. We've used our 45 minutes. So. The book, again, is called Renegaded Heart, Lorenzo Lamas with Jeff Lindberg, and it's from Ben Bella Books. Get it online in your local bookstore. Thank you so much. This has been a wonderful time. I really enjoyed it.
Thank you, David. I've enjoyed the time as well. And thank you all for listening, and please pick up a copy of Renegade at Heart if you're so inclined.
Just glad you're so happy now. Everything's fine in your life. I'm glad to hear that after reading the book. So,
I appreciate that. Thank you so much for
thank you.
Taking the time today.
This has been Dave's Book Talk. We'll talk to you next time.
You have just enjoyed the podcast of David's Book Talk, brought to you by your host, book lover David English. Please visit us at davidsbooktalk.com. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter and subscribe to our podcast. We want to hear from you, and we don't want you to miss our upcoming shows with top authors like Mary Higgins Clark, Patricia Cornwell, Lisa Scottolini, Jackie Collins, Nelson DeMille, Michael Connelly, Sue Grafton, Steve Martini, Dale Brown, David Baldacci.